Is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Get me out, be the biggest little flirt. Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, this is Veronica Monet of the Shame-Free Zone. Thanks for joining us again. This week, we're going to be talking to a real live escort. Woo! Okay, I used to be an escort, too, so it's not such a big deal. But anyway, Jane Holiday is her name, and she's worked in the adult industry, actually, in quite a few different capacities. Since 1998, she's worked as a stripper, a dominatrix, a madam, an escort, and most recently as an international traveling companion to some very nice gentlemen. Oh, I know what that's like. She's got a blog, and she's writing a book, and she likes to share material that a lot of us might consider dark and heavy in a fun, sincere, and enlightening way. Now, this might be a little bit of an attention getter. She's actually the mother of three children. And she feels that her experiences over the past dozen years make her uniquely qualified as an expert on the topics of intimacy, romance, travel, fun, and parenting. Of course, she's not going to get any disagreement from me as a former escort who was also a parent simultaneously. But I can't wait to hear her story. And Jane Holiday, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone.
Thank you, Veronica. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you here as well. So tell me, what happened in 1998?
I had become a single mother for the second time. And this time I had three little kids. And I had been working at a middle management job for a mid-sized company. And I wasn't getting any child support from either of my ex-husbands. And I just sat down one day and realized I was having a hard time paying my bills. My credit cards were maxed out. And I thought, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do?
Right.
So I cried a little bit. And then I thought, okay. I started actually waitressing in a strip club. And so I was working all day and then working all night and just sleeping about 4 hours at night. And that didn't last long with me at all. So I'd actually met one of the girls in the club. One of the women who was dancing there said, hey, have you ever thought of escorting? And I said, no, of course not. And she said, come with me. I'm going on this interview with this woman. And I said, oh, man, I don't know about that. Then I thought about it. I thought, you know, what the heck? And so I went on the interview, and it wasn't at all what I expected. The woman who was interviewing us, told us that under no circumstances were we to ever have sex with any of the clients that she sent us to meet. And I thought, okay, great. She told us that we were to do lingerie modeling and we could give rub downs because you can't call it a massage unless you're licensed in the state of Texas.
Right.
I was in Houston at this time. And so for several months, I would go on these calls and I was not doing anything more than doing some lingerie modeling. I was doing rub downs. And because I was just so naive, I didn't realize that she had told me not to have sex with the clients because that's what she had to tell me because she didn't want to get herself in trouble for, pimping out some girls. And so, just for a long time, I was able to get away with that. And I'm not really quite sure how. I guess I was just charming company.
So, I hear you, but I would think at this point, now you probably have discovered that that's actually part of the gig, and it's an overlooked aspect to it. A lot of people think that escorting is all about sex for pay, and in fact, a great percentage of it is about companionship and getting compensated for your time for providing that really valuable service. So I'm sure it's not the last time that you got paid for showing up, you know, in a loving, attentive way.
No, that is actually, and you're absolutely correct about that. And that really surprised me. I mean, because at that level, you know, I was working for this low-level agency, and this was the day, but this was back before the internet. So she was just describing us and sending us out. And I think the men were just happy that I looked like what she said I looked like. And then, yes, because I'm a nice person and fun to talk to, and I realized that, yeah, that really wasn't what the whole appointment was about. But then as I moved on to working for a higher-level agency, and then where the men were spending more money because they wanted longer appointments. And at first I'm thinking, oh, brother, I'm not going to go and on these appointments and, you know, and get worn out having sex for 2 hours. I'm not going to do that. That doesn't sound like any fun. And I realized the reason they wanted the longer appointments was because they wanted to talk to me. They wanted to sit down and get to know me. And I even had some of them, and still even though they say, oh, I just want to pretend that we're on a date. I just want to pretend like, you know, just for this while. I just want to be here with you and just pretend that you're just all mine. And it really did surprise me. And even now, even though I've been doing it for so long, I mean, just, you know, just last week, you know, I have the same thing all the time. All the time. They just want someone to talk to, someone to be nice to them.
Well, and I think, don't you think it actually goes, when we talk about being nice to them, what do you think that means?
Well, and I use the word nice because it's a very friendly, I think a very friendly and a very innocent word when I say someone's nice. And
yeah.
And by being nice, just being sweet, being present, paying attention and not being concerned with maybe some little habit they have that I might find annoying if I spent a lot of time with them. You know, there's nothing for me to pick on. You know, there's nothing, we don't have this super strong emotional bond where something that they're going to do is going to get on my nerves. You know, and even as I've been seeing clients for, you know, for years now, I've been seeing some of the same clients for years. You know, you get to know somebody, and yeah, everybody has little quirks and things can kind of irritate you, but I know that I'm only seeing them for such a short period of time that I'm willing to put aside all of my little quirks and all of my idiosyncrasies and just be present and just be there for them.
Yes, so they're getting that undivided attention.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I am engaged. I'm there for them. And some men are uncomfortable with that. They're not used to that.
Some men are not.
Yes, yeah, some men are not. They're not used to that, and so they are at first a little uncomfortable and think, oh no, let me do things for you. And I let them, but I'm also like, hey, I'm here for you. What do you want to do? What do you want to talk about? Tell me about your day.
Yeah.
And they love it. I think that anybody would love that, but I think sometimes they're just surprised. That I actually care.
It's I've often thought, wouldn't it be nice if there were more escorting services for women? Because we'd love to have all that attention, you know, in our direction as well.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and I think a lot of it, you know, of course, because the relationship that I have with my clients, I mean, it is in large part based in fantasy because. You know, I'm not coming home to them, and their whiskers are in the sink. You know, and there's toothpaste all over the place, or they didn't put the
right
toilet down, or, you know, like, I don't have to contend with that part of them. I have the fantasy part of them, too. So for both of us,
it's true.
Nice.
And I have found that, you know, the more you focus on those, the good attributes, you can, like, enlarge them. You know, I think when you focus on the good in anybody, that gives,
sure.
You know, it actually encourages them to be even better.
Well, because they know that I expect that. Like, I'll tell them, I don't know you as that man who doesn't take out the trash.
Yeah.
So that's not the you I know. You don't have to be that guy around me.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And it is a rarefied format where people get to, I think, show up with aspects of themselves, too. I noticed a lot of my clients would try out parts of their personality that were unexpressed, whether that might be a really dominant, in-charge man who wanted to find out what it was like to be more feminine and allow somebody to take control of him, or somebody who's used to being in charge all the time and wants to maybe experience some BDSM. So I noticed there was oftentimes like this. Oh, and another thing that was really popular, and maybe you can tell me if this is popular for for you, but wanting to be seduced. And I remember the first time a man asked me that, seduced me, I was like, I did. I ran an ad with my photo and my phone number, and you're here. But that wasn't what he meant. He wanted something else. And then I went, oh, the guy wants me to whisper sweet nothings in his ears and, you know, undress him and tell him how desirable he is and the kind of things that girls want.
Sure. I find that to be true as well. And those are the exact words that the men will use too. I want you to seduce me. And you know, the first thing I thought about, what do you even mean by that? You know, what does that mean? What does that mean to you, a man, you know, or you, or this particular man who I don't really know? You know, what does it mean to him to be seduced? And it is like what you're talking about, just someone just to say, you know, to take their hand and just lead them to the couch or the bed and just have them just be the recipient of the attention.
Yes.
and of what's going on, where they're not having to direct the scene.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. I think that's. I think a lot of what happens with escorting is that the standard gender roles actually get reversed or blurred, so that people are given more freedom to show up as they truly are, rather than trying to fulfill a particular concept of who they should be as a man or a woman. I think a lot of people get locked into that. Women do, men do, get locked into these gender stereotypes when they're married or dating, and it can be really stultifying. I mean, it really can, for a lot of people, create this sense of being trapped. And I think...
Sure.
Yeah, you go to see an escort, and it's like, you could just be whoever you want. Literally, of course, you know, some of the stories we hear are not any at all true.
Well, yeah, because I know even me being, I mean, it's been a while since I have been in a personal dating relationship, but even then, you know, and I don't know if it's because I get lazy or we as a couple get lazy, where we just fall into these roles, and then it's just kind of like, oh, yeah. And sometimes, I mean, that's really nice and it's great because you know what to expect. And other times it's hard, though, to break out of that role when you've got that person who sees you in this one particular way. And I
yes.
think that you really have to work in a relationship to keep it, I guess, fresh and to where you're allowed to be somebody different.
This actually, now that I'm working with couples as a couples consultant, I recommend something called Date Your Mate. It's a program where I say at least once a month you should go out on a date with your partner, and it has to be a situation where no concerts, no movies. I want you actually like sitting across from each other at a table talking and looking at each other. And then the topics that are off limits are like finances, job, house, chores, you know. But the topics that I want them to talk about are religion, politics, entertainment. So, like, you know, what movies have you seen? What music have you listened to? You know, what are your religious and spiritual beliefs? And what are your politics? And the reason that I suggest that is because I think there's a lot of assumptions. Oh, I've known you for 20 years. I know what you're all about. And people get so frustrated with that. And I think it's one of the reasons that they want to have an affair, because somebody at work actually listens to them and sees them for who they are today, not for who they were the day that they married their spouse.
Yes, I agree with that. And I think that, that I think that's a wonderful idea. That's a great idea, because that's also what, you know, I do, especially with someone new, a new client. That's what we do. We don't go to the movies. We don't go to watch a play, not until we've known each other for a while, because they want to spend as much time as possible face-to-face with me, you know, across the dinner table, because
yes.
They want to engage me in conversation, and they want to know me. They want to know what makes me tick. You know, and they want to know, why am I doing this? And then once they start to talk to me and realize I'm just this normal woman, then they want to tell me about themselves.
And don't you think,
share a piece of themselves? And I love that.
Don't you think this is where the stereotypes that we have about men so completely shortchange men as people?
Yes.
Because I think people are absolutely shocked to find out that men who have disposable income, where they could just simply order sex like they were ordering a pizza, would rather sit across the table for 5 hours and get to know the woman they're spending the evening with.
Yes. Yes, that was, I actually had an appointment last night, a 5-hour appointment, and we spent 4 hours of the appointment, okay, no, 3.5 hours of the appointment at the dinner table. And we had one martini the entire time. So we weren't sitting there getting drunk. We were sitting there talking. We were
yeah.
just having this fabulous conversation. And I said, ooh, maybe we should go upstairs. Because it was 3.5 hours. And he was like, oh, okay. Are you sure? You know.
Oh, I know.
And, you know, and it was just wonderful, and it was nice. Because I really felt like I got to know him. And then, you know, of course, it makes me feel good, and it makes me want to open up to a man, because he is actually engaging me as a person, as a woman.
Yeah.
And he feels that same way. He wants to open up to me because I'm engaging him as a man and as a person.
And this is a part of escorting that, of course, defies all the stereotypes, which is that it's really about two people sharing intimacy on an emotional and psychological level. Tell us a little bit about, like, how many regulars do you have? Do you see a lot of the same people over and over again?
I do. I don't see many people right now, just because I've structured my business that way. That's what I prefer, because I just have so many just great regulars. But I have two gentlemen that I see every week. For multiple hours, and so that's just so nice.
Oh.
You know, in so many ways, it just makes my life just so pleasant, because I can count on them, and not just financially, but I can count on them because we've become friends.
Yes,
and I have their support. You know, if I'm having a little trouble with something, trying to structure something business wise, I know that I can, you know, text one of them or call one and say, hey, can I run this by you? And they're like, oh yeah, of course. You know, because they're feeling valued in that way, and because, you know, they're my friend and they love to help. And then I have some people that I'll see, you know, once a month, and then I'll have some people that I'll see every other week, and then I'll see some people that and that's all in Texas. And then I'll travel to other cities, and then I have regulars there as well. I don't do I don't know if you did this, but I don't do the typical touring. You know, where you put up an ad in a city and
no.
then you go and then you have a bunch of hourly appointments. I think that may be like a newer kind of thing with the internet, you know. But I used to do that, but once I got a good base of, you know, I have one great client in New York, and I'll just go see him.
That's
I don't see a bunch of strangers, you know.
That's for the middle class or the middle level, I think, because then you're trying to get volume. You're trying to get yourself a hotel room, and you see as many people as possible to justify your trip to that city. I never did that. I always booked exclusively for one gentleman who would pay all my travel expenses and put me up in a private hotel. I always got my own private hotel because I refused to sleep in the same room. I wanted my own room, you know, so that I could regroup and recharge my batteries and give them the kind of focused attention that they were accustomed to. And certainly,
sure. I appreciate that. I will do overnight visits. I can say that's not my favorite. You know, mm-hmm. where you're sleeping in bed with someone else.
Yeah.
And I would never do that with somebody I didn't know. But every other escort I talk to, I don't just hate it. And I think because I'm not used to sleeping with somebody else, and so I don't sleep well. But
yeah.
Also, you know, you want to look. You know, you wake up in the morning and you want to, you know, do your private stuff that you do when you wake up in the morning and have your routine. And when somebody else is there, it takes away. And then it takes away also, I think, some of the fantasy of it. But
I think so too.
But that's what some of the men are after, though. They
Yes, they want so much. And this is what's so amazing is that everybody thinks that men who pay for escorting services are these superficial cads who don't value a relationship. But it's like usually they are busy businessmen who are trying to reproduce every element of an involved, intimate, long-term relationship that they possibly can in the professional context. So they want extended conversations. They want hugging and kissing. They want to sleep over. They want to know your real name. They want...
Oh, yeah. Give me your, give me your email address. I don't want Jane's email address. And I'm saying, if you want me to get in touch with you, then you'll email me at my Jane's email address.
I know.
Not my personal one.
Those boundaries, huh? They're so hard to maintain sometimes.
Yeah, and sometimes when someone is being so, you know, you can tell that someone's very lonely, you know, and they're being very genuine and very sweet. Sometimes, you know, I know for me personally, like I want to be able to be there for them in the way that they want me to be. But I know that I can't because that's not good for me.
Yeah.
I have to maintain those boundaries because I have a life outside of the time that I spend with my clients.
Absolutely.
Even though it's a big part of my life, it's not, you know, it's, and I used to be able to say, oh, that's something I do, it's not who I am. But it has really shaped who I am. Escorting has really, it changed my life, and it changed the way that I looked at people, you know, men and women, you know,
sure.
And particularly myself, and the way that I looked at the world. And it improved my worldview so much. It improved my view of men. A lot of people are, you must really hate men. Like, are you kidding? How can I be an escort if I hated men?
Oh, I know.
You know, but I love men, and I've come to love them more and more as I've gotten to know more and more men. You know, I mean, think about the people that you've met when you were escorting. You'd never meet them anyplace else.
Oh, God, no. And some of the most fascinating, amazing, successful men you could ever hope to meet.
Yes, motivated, interesting, successful, creative, driven.
Yeah.
Just... So giving of their time, but I know that they're like that with me because they can be, because our relationship has a very defined boundary, and I think it's because I made the boundary. You know, the boundary is listed on my website. You know, the there's unspoken boundaries, and then sometimes, you know, you have to speak the boundaries as well. But I think that makes the men feel good too, because they know what their boundaries are. It's very well defined. There's nothing murky about what's going on. And I know that in other relationships, especially with, I mean, I have, of course, lots of women friends. I know sometimes, you know, and especially with my girlfriends, you know, we don't define our boundaries. We just go all over the place with each other.
Right. Right.
But I think it makes these men, they feel safe. They're like, oh, okay, this is how I act when I'm here.
Uh-huh.
And so
yeah.
It's like, oh, I can relax in that.
Sometimes, I'm sure you must have had some clients that fell in love with you.
Yes, I have.
How do you deal with that?
Oh, boy. You know, it's such a tough one. You know, because I actually had a situation a couple of years ago, and it seemed like I don't know what was going on that year for me. I guess it was 2009. I had three clients in a row fall in love with me or tell me that they loved me. And I told them, like, hey, after I had one gentleman tell me that after our first meeting. And I said, no, you don't. And I would just, and then I saw him again, and then he was like, no, I really love you. I said, you can't, that's not what this is about. You know, I don't return your feelings. I like you, or I wouldn't be seeing you. And then I'll tell them, you know, if they keep it up, I'm like, I can't see you anymore because I feel irresponsible. Because I feel like you keep on seeing me because you think that you're going to change my mind. And you're not going to change my mind. And so I had three clients. I had to tell them I couldn't see them anymore.
Because they were falling in love with you.
Because they were falling in love with me. And it really surprised me. I thought, what in the world? And because it wasn't like they were, well, one man was, I would say he was emotionally, he was just unsophisticated. He'd only, you know, he'd been married to one woman for 35 years.
Oh.
And so I think that's just what he thought that he was supposed to do.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not really sure, but, you know, he was a sweetheart, but I just didn't feel right about continuing to see him because I really did think that he was continuing to see me because he thought that he was going to change my mind.
Yeah, right.
Or he bought me things or did things for me. And then I would feel guilty. Mm. I had one client last year. He kept wanting to buy me a house. And I told him no because he was telling me he loved me.
Right, right.
And I was like, I'd like someone to buy me a house, but not when they're doing it because they're trying to buy me.
Now, see, that breaks up another issue. Some people have a stereotype about an escort or a prostitute, that she's greedy, she's just about the money. And it may seem very strange to them to think that you would say no to an expensive house or car or something like that.
A car? I have. And I've said no to a car, too. And I'm thinking about the women that I've known over the years. And I don't know any successful escort who is in it just for the money. You can't be, just like any other business, you cannot be in something just for the money. You won't survive.
Yeah.
It shows. Of course, it's a big factor, yeah. But it can't be about the money. The money's
not. Explain to the listeners why somebody who's okay with getting paid for sex or their companionship or their time would not be okay receiving a house or a car. What is it that would motivate you to say no to that?
I said no to the house and the car for the same reason. And those were two different men. I said no to the house because I felt like that's a lot of money. A house, that's a huge investment. And there would definitely be strings attached. You know, something like that. It wouldn't be just like he would say, he wasn't the kind of, he wasn't a billionaire where he could just buy me a house and it would be, you know, like you or me spending $1,000 on something.
Right.
I mean, this was like a significant investment for him as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to have this house in my hometown because he wanted to come and see me in my hometown. And because I wouldn't see him in Austin. I wouldn't see him at that time when I was in Austin. And he's like, oh, well, if I buy you a place, then I figure I can come there and I can spend weekends with you.
Yes, right.
And I'm like, no. Because he was wanting something from me. He was wanting to pretend that we were a couple and pretend we were married.
Yes, right.
I just wasn't going to, I guess I could have pretended, but I just couldn't do it. And with the car, it was because he was just wanting, I felt like he was just wanting to mark me. You know, and okay, this is the thing. I did, he he begged me to take this car, and I told him no. For 3 months, I said, no, I'm not taking the car. Finally, he's like, would you, and so I, he said, please just take the car. I already have it. And I said, all right, fine. And so I took the car. I had it for 2 months, and I gave it back to him. And it sounds so crazy because he kept asking. He would call me up and say, oh, have you changed the oil yet? Have you, you know, and just ask me all these questions about the car. He would use the car as an excuse to keep contacting me. It was just so silly. And I thought, uh-uh. And, you know, when I returned the car to him, you would have thought that I had I punched him in the stomach. He was so upset and so offended, and he wouldn't see me anymore after that. And I thought that he would take it as a sign that I respected him.
Right.
And he didn't take it that way at all.
Yeah.
So, yeah, nobody gives you gifts like that without
having he obviously had expectations. I remember a client who got very upset because I was wearing a wedding ring. And, you know, I was all over the press. I did lots of interviews and always talked about being married. Almost everybody knew I was married, but this one gentleman was from, you know, Europe, and I guess he hadn't gotten the latest news press release. But so he kept trying to pretend that my wedding ring was something other than what it was. And when he finally figured out what it was and just came out and asked me, I said, yes, I'm married. And he was so upset. I was just so upset, and I actually encountered that several times. Remember this other older man who was, going on and on about his wife, and I said something about my husband, and he goes, you're married? And I go, yes, and he goes, oh, that's terrible, and I go, you just told me you're married, and he goes, that's different.
Yes, I've had that happen. I wasn't married, but I was just casually dating someone, and I had, several years ago, actually, and I had a different blog, and I had it, and I talked about this dating relationship I was having. One of my clients, who I saw every week, who was married, called me and fussed at me. He said, you know, I was really upset to read in your blog that you're dating somebody. I said, you're married?
Wow.
And his attitude, well, that's different. Like, how is that different?
What it means is I don't get to own you. That's how it's different. How it's different is that I want to own you.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, and what about that? What about that? Have you been married? You've got children.
I have.
You've been married.
I've been married 3 times.
What do you? Oh, 3 times. Wow. What do you think the difference between prostitution and marriage is? How would you define that?
Oh, wow. You know, I have never thought about that. I've never thought of them being the same.
Not even remately similar, right?
No, not even remotely similar. I think for one thing, I know that I consider, you know, my job, I am so free. I do what I want to do when I want to do it. I don't answer to anybody. And I love that because that's my personality.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, being in a monogamous, committed relationship, I didn't feel that way.
Right.
And that's me, you know, and I know that's me. And I just feel more powerful. I feel so powerful as an escort.
Yes.
Because I can be, you know, I don't have to be monogamous if I don't want to be. And no one thinks anything. No one's like, oh, my goodness. Because people just, I guess a lot of times people don't know. I mean, my friends know what I do. But, and so they talk to me. And they, of course, you know, they know me long enough now. They don't ask me all the questions about, oh, my gosh, I mean, that guy really... Really, he's in love with you? Are you kidding me? You know, they're just all so surprised, all the stories. They think it's great. And I'm sure you had that experience, too, where women were just like, wow, you know, I'm so intrigued. I'd love to try that. And if my friends who are married or in relationships are not happy with. Because I think, I mean, I would like to get married again. But I have some growing to do, I think, before I'm ready to be involved in that kind of relationship.
Yeah. What is it about marriage that would, appeals to you that you'd like to do it again after three times?
Well, well, evidently I like getting married, huh?
I think you do.
I think part of me is idealizing it. I think, wow, wouldn't that just be so cool to have this one person that I could go to who knew me and loved me and understood me, and that it would just be, that was the person who was in my sanctuary, which is my home. You know,
right.
That person would be there, and we would share that space, and that would just be so wonderful.
Yeah. What was it about the last three marriages that did not work? What was it that didn't work?
Well, the first marriage, I was young, and we got married because we were living together, and I got pregnant, and with my daughter, which was fantastic, you know. And we were going to wait to get. We thought, we'll get married after the baby's born, and then some parental pressure caused us to get married. I mean, we were happy to get married. It was just, it was just really because I was pregnant.
Yeah,
you know, we
right.
were friends, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't some kind of long term. And I never even really thought about getting married, so we just kind of got married, and we were together for 7 years. And also, during that time, he was sober when we first got married and we were dating, and then he had been he was a recovering heroin addict, and then he just started using again, and so of course that, you know, that's not a tolerable situation at all.
No.
So he was in and out of rehab. So that was kind of a drag, and
putting it mildly.
I'll just gloss over that. we're friends today, and you know, when the kids visit them and all that. So it's, you know, it's, he's sober now. But good for him. Yeah, he's doing great. And then my second husband, really, I married because he could he helped me get away from my first husband.
Okay.
And so it's just one of those kinds of things. And then I had a child with him. And, you know, and I get along with him fine, too. I mean, we're fine. We just didn't need to be married. We were together for 7 years. And then my last husband and I, we got married. And I married him because the kids liked him. Yeah.
Interesting.
He was a nice guy, sweet guy, nice guy. We were good friends, but he just wasn't what I would call a good husband. He just was never really interested in doing anything. You know, it's like I always did everything. And one day I thought, why am I doing everything?
Right, and probably, were you working as an escort at the time, too?
No, I wasn't. I was when I met him.
Uh-huh.
And then I quit before we got married. I quit. Yeah, he was getting really uncomfortable. And if I can say I don't say I regret. Yeah, there was a time when I regretted quitting because I quit for him. I didn't want to quit. I quit because he was uncomfortable. And and so I think I probably always resented him for that.
Probably.
Yeah, because then he didn't do anything to really make up for the income.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, because to me, money equals freedom.
Oh, yeah.
Money equals my spending time with my kids. You know, that's what it means to me. That's the driving force behind my being an escort, is because I like to have time. I love having time.
Yeah. It's I think I think, like, being married for me was so much about the love connection and the commitment.
Yeah.
And I noticed that a lot of women who've never worked as escorts or prostitutes would actually bring some elements of that into their marriages and into their dating. They'd kind of like decide how much sex the guy was going to get depending on how much he'd spent on dinner or if he bought them an expensive gift.
That's funny to me. That would never occur to me.
I know, huh? And also the whole idea that they would want to marry a man who would support them and take care of them, you know, most of the escorts I know marry for love and take care of their husbands.
it's a lecture, you know.
Yeah, well, I know what you're saying, unless he demands that you retire. Actually, my husband demanded that I retire, too. And before we got married, I agreed that I would. And then just before our wedding day, I said, I've changed my mind. No feminist in her right mind would quit her profession because she was getting married. And if you want to call off the wedding, I understand, you know, because I kind of reneged on my deal. But then he said, oh, no, he wanted to go through the wedding. And then he made my life miserable for about 2 years.
So, oh, brother.
Yeah, that was no fun.
No. Yeah, it's kind of the reverse of what I did. I quit under duress. I mean, you know, I agreed and thought, oh, and you know, I actually felt relieved when I quit because I had been lying to him about some of the things that I was doing and not doing.
Right.
And professionally, and it was such a relief to me to not be a liar anymore that I confused that with being happy to quit. And so about 6 months later, I thought, no, I'm just relieved not to be lying and covering my tracks and the stress of, it's hard for me to be in love with someone and want to be open and share myself with them, like say, you know, someone I'm dating or my husband, and
right.
then go out and share myself with other people. I have a hard time with that.
Yeah.
So that's why I decided, I just won't date. Maybe I can reconcile that. I don't know. It's not, you know, being in a committed relationship isn't a priority for me.
Yeah.
You know, if it were, then I wouldn't be living the life I am.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's, you know, one of the things I think that annoys me is the stereotype that somehow or another women who've never worked as escorts are, they've got better motives. They would never try to use a man. And I've just seen it the exact opposite. I've seen that what I call amateurs, they're amateur prostitutes, right? they don't have any professional ethic. They have no professional boundaries. they just run around giving women in general a bad name because they're trying always to pick guys' pockets. And what I've noticed about, you know, professional escorts and prostitutes is more of an attitude of, I take great pride in my profession, and, you know, I take great pride in supporting myself, and if anybody's going to take care of somebody, I'd probably be taking care of my man, you know. It's a totally different attitude.
Sure.
And I don't know. Maybe, you know, a lot of it really is a much more equal, egalitarian approach to relationships with the other genders. You know, I think a lot of times there isn't this assumption that a man is supposed to take care of us. Sure.
And I think that, you know, the masculine and the feminine roles, I think, are... I find that fascinating and interesting, just you know, the masculine energy and feminine energy and how, you know, they can move around within a relationship and with a couple, and I love that. I never had any problem making more money than my husband. That doesn't bother me at all. I don't care. It's fine. But it sure is nice, though, when I like... Maybe just because I'm a Southerner, I don't know, but I like it when a man acts like a gentleman,
uh-huh.
opening my doors, and treating me like a lady, but respecting that I'm a grown woman, that I'm a grown-up, and not treating me like a child, not doing those things because he thinks I'm not capable, but just to show me respect.
Absolutely.
I don't like that. I don't want to mess up my nails, you know, opening doors and carrying everything. But I also do expect to be treated as an adult and as an equal, certainly.
Right.
And this phenomenon, this has happened to me only a couple of times, and it actually just happened to me last week, and it was somebody, and I haven't seen anybody new in quite some time.
Uh-huh.
And he passed screening, had great references, sent me a very nice email, but I could tell in his email he was just too nice. I don't know if you had ever experienced this, just in general anywhere, he was so nice and so overly concerned with not offending me that it became a hindrance to our communication and to our interaction.
Yes, yes.
Because he had been, I know, he had been slapped down by some escorts. Because some are kind of mean, you know, and like to kind of put people in their place, just like with any business. And evidently he had been picking some girls, and by girls, women, who were just not nice.
And
so he was, oh my gosh, he was walking on eggshells the whole night. And I told him, like, you know, just relax. You know, I'm here for you. I'm here so, you know, you can relax and unwind. And he was just so nice that it just got on my nerves.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because he was just, every little thing was just such a big deal to him. Oh, you know, before he'd ask me a question, well, you can just tell me to shut up if you want to. If you don't want to answer this, you just don't have to answer it, and you can just tell me to shut up. And after the third time, I said, you know, I'm a grown-up.
Yeah.
I know how to protect myself and to set my own boundaries, and you can just ask me questions, and if I don't want to answer the question, I'll politely tell you that I don't want to answer the question.
Yeah.
And so it's odd to me when someone's just being so nice. I'm thinking, you know, you've spent all this time and money to have me come and spend time with you, and you're just apologizing to me all night.
Yeah.
All night. And I was trying to make him feel better because I was feeling, oh, this poor guy. And he just would never let me get behind that wall.
Mm.
He's never let me get around that. That's why I felt like it was.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think what you're describing there, of course, is somebody who's insecure and has low self-esteem and probably trying to compensate for something. And of course, it can be annoying. I'm wondering if you haven't found that you worked day jobs before you started getting into the sex industry.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The contrast between those, what I noticed, I'm wondering if this is true for you too, was just that I actually got to be more uppity, more outspoken, more opinionated, more, I suppose, cantankerous as an escort than I ever got to do when I was working in an office environment. And I'm wondering if that was also your experience.
Yes. I'm going to say yes and no. I'm pretty bossy. So if I'm in an environment where I'm not allowed to be bossy and set the tone, I'll just leave.
Okay, gotcha.
So in office environments, I'm trying to think. I started out, I was an executive assistant and a paralegal, and so I was in situations where I had to boss my boss around a lot. And people would just be like, oh my gosh, aren't you afraid to talk to him like that? I'm like, no. Because he's keeping me from doing my job. Someone's got to tell him. You know?
Right. Right.
So, but, yeah, I'm very straightforward and very direct with my clients, especially because he was getting to where, and he was also talking, the same gentleman that was being so insecure, he kept referring to escorting as, he would say, well, you know, other women in the hobby. And I said, this is not a hobby. This is a profession. This is a legitimate profession. And I said, that's why those women act that way, because they don't take themselves seriously.
Right.
And he was like, whoa. He didn't say whoa, but I could tell he was. And after that, you know, he changed his tone a little bit. I think that, you know, I kind of forgot what I was going with that, actually.
Well, you know what? I think I do know what you're talking about, because it's really about the professionalism. And, and like you said, it's not a hobby. And that division is so crucial, I think, because unfortunately women have had, you know, 6,000 years of compromised access to money and power.
Yeah.
And one of the things that happened, of course, way, way back was that there was this split between the good girls and the bad girls, and the bad girls really retained some access to money and power. And the good girls got protection. They got protection.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but in the bargain, they lost a lot of their freedoms.
And yes, lost their power.
Yes. So you talk about feeling very, very powerful as an escort, and I'd have to concur with that, absolutely. And I've had lots of other jobs and job experiences before I ever got into the sex industry. And that, of course, is another misnomer, right, that we're all like, 20 or 19 or something when we enter the industry. And I know that wasn't the case for you.
No. Yeah. I was 36, 37, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the first time I decided to be a stripper, it was in New Orleans. It was after Katrina. And I was 41. I thought, what the heck? I've always wanted to do that. I've always been so curious about that. And I was married at the time, and my husband said, yeah, that's sure, honey, if you want to do that, sure, go ahead. And it was fun. That was a lot of fun. But, I find many of my friends do. I mean, I think when it comes down to the nitty-gritty details of what they think I'm doing, they don't find that appealing. But they love my lifestyle because I'm always traveling.
Oh, yeah.
I'm always, my oldest two kids graduated from college. They're both graduated from college. My daughter's going to medical school next year. My kids have always been in private school. That's where all my money's gone.
No kidding, huh?
Yeah. I feel privileged to be able to spend my money like that.
Yeah.
And I love that. And I love that I also have all the free time that I've always been able to spend with the kids. And I know my other friends are just like, wow, that just must be so great. But they're not willing. I'm like, well, there are compromises, of course. I mean, now that I've just gotten older, or I'm just so comfortable with what I do, that I don't really feel like I'm making a lot of sacrifices like I did when I was working in an office.
I certainly didn't. I felt like somebody had freed the slaves.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes, I'm like, oh boy, I shouldn't have said that I could meet them at 10 in the morning,
Yeah.
That's the worst scheduling situation I have to deal with, unless, an early flight somewhere. But still, it's like, those are my choices. I made that choice.
True. See, that's another thing I've noticed about escorts. It doesn't seem like any of us like to get up early.
You don't have to.
I try to explain to people. I mean, my God, it's like I've been working at night for years. How do you think I'm going to possibly adapt to changing my biorhythms now? So we're starting to run out of time here. We got about another 5 minutes, and I wanted to ask you a few questions about the book that you're working on.
Oh, yeah.
What's the title of it, first of all? It's a fascinating title.
The title of my book is Becoming Jane, How Life as a High-Dollar Escort Led Me to My Higher Self.
And what a beautiful premise. So how is it that escorting led you to your higher self? In a nutshell, obviously you can't give away the whole book.
Sure.
But
okay. In a nutshell, I learned a lot about boundaries. I learned about what I'm willing to do and not willing to do, and I don't just mean physically. I've learned a lot about myself, like what I like, what I expect out of people, what I expect out of myself, what I just expect out of the world, all from escorting.
Yeah.
How to be a better mom, how to be available and open to people, that what I think doesn't always matter. Actually, it hardly ever does.
How does escorting make you a better mother?
Well, okay, as I've mentioned, being able to spend the time. But just because I've really had to learn to value myself. Because if I didn't value myself, I couldn't be an escort. And so a lot of times, because when I first started, I didn't exactly have a whole bunch of self-confidence. Yeah, I might have been bossy, but I wasn't exactly like, really willing to stand up for myself a lot, and it taught me to do that. Because in a lot of situations with that, you have to. Not because you're in danger, but because someone will just take advantage of your time. And emotionally get yourself in situations that you don't need to be involved in.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So help me be really strong, just really, really strong, and convey that to my kids.
So that whole thing about the boundary thing, I absolutely experienced the same thing. And I know what comes to a lot of people's minds is, well, if you had appropriate boundaries, you wouldn't be, you know, having sex with strangers for money. It's a little difficult for them to wrap their mind around that. So
I can see why people would think that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're raised to think that. We're domesticated to think that.
Domesticated. Yes.
I like that word. I think it's funny.
I love it. When I think about the old model, that, you know, what the whole concept of wives, and you and I have both been wives, and you've just stated that you'd like to be a wife again, and I'm in a long-term committed relationship. I certainly adore that model, actually. But the way the society practices the wife thing and how it was birthed was around this whole concept of dumb, docile, and domesticated. and that's not a prejudice, nor is it a slam. It's just the truth. If you go back to the Renaissance period, wives were absolutely not allowed to attend college. They were not allowed to learn to read or write. But if you became a courtesan, you could.
I was expected. You had to be entertaining.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So anyway, all right, we're down to our last minute. I'm sorry, this conversation, we're just going to have to do this again, Jane. We're going to have to do it again. But so how are people going to get a sneak peek at this book? I don't think that you've published it yet, but how can they get a sneak peek?
Okay, no, I haven't published it yet. I'll be publishing it sometime next year. My website, my book website is www.sunwithjane.com. And Jane is Jayne.
What a great...
And I've got blogs on there, and if people want to opt in, I've got an ebook on there that I'll send them absolutely free. And then also I'll be sending a couple of chapters from my book out, too.
Awesome. You can tell that you just came back from the 21st Century Book Marketing Conference in San Diego.
Ooh.
Which is where
we
met.
Yes, it is. That was so fun.
It really was. Well, you know, there's an old saying. Let's see. I guess good girls go to heaven and bad girls go everywhere. And Jane, I really wish we had another hour.
I know. I can't believe an hour has gone by. This has been so fun, and I really appreciate that. You know, you wanted to interview me and allow me to share my thoughts and ideas, and I really do hope that it's helpful to people and can enlighten people.
Oh, I'm sure it is, and I think that we need to do it again. So as soon as your book is ready to be promoted, give me a call. Let me know. We'll have you back on, and we'll wow the listeners again with some more of your stories. It's really been a fun conversation. I've always thought that some of the funnest conversations I've ever eavesdropped on or participated in were when a group of escorts get together and talk about the realities of their life. And this has been a little slice of that, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. It has. And thank you so much. Thank you. It's been fun. It's been great.
Cool. All right, Jane, best of luck to you. Much love. And thanks so much for being bold and brave and out. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Veronica.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you. Sering kesepian.